Hello and welcome to this week's Expert HR podcast with me, Ellie Gelder. After what has so far been an increasingly heated campaign on both sides of the fence, the EU referendum is almost here. On Thursday, the 23rd of June, the British public will vote on whether or not the UK should remain in the EU. But what impact will this have on the world of HR? And how can employers deal with concerns from EU employees who are worried about job security? With me now on the phone is leading employment law expert Darren Newman, who's going to talk through what a Brexit could mean for employment law. Hi, Darren.
Hi, Ellie Hayden.
Darren, can you just give us an overview of how the employment law landscape would change if the outcome of the referendum is a Brexit? What timescale are we looking at?
The timescale is a little bit difficult to predict. What we know is that if we vote to leave the EU and the government immediately gives notice under Article 50 of the treaty that we want to leave the EU, then there is a default two-year period. So if nothing else is agreed, our exit becomes effective 2 years later. However, the other member states enter a period of discussion and negotiation about the terms of our exit. So it's possible to agree some other mechanism. It's possible to agree some other timescale, but I'd be very surprised if it took longer than 2 years. I think it's going to take about 2 years. So we can probably say that from the 24th of June, when we realise that we voted Brexit, there's no immediate change to our legal system or the HR landscape, but we'll be looking for a very big change potentially coming in 2 years later.
Sure. And it's important to just point out, isn't it, that there's a difference between what the UK could do and what it's likely to do, isn't there? So can you just explain the position?
Well, it's really about political guesswork. Let's say it takes us 2 years to leave the EU. We're looking at 2018, 2019 when that takes effect. Our employment law is likely to stay in place for the immediate future. The mere fact of leaving the EU won't change our employment law too much because we've implemented European law through our own regulations and our own Act of Parliament. So the Equality Act won't fall away just because we leave Europe. So what we've got to try and do is figure out what a government coming in 2020 is going to want to do. And what happens is going to depend, frankly, on the nature of the government we get. I think it's fair to say that if we got a Labour government in 2020, we wouldn't expect very much change. We certainly wouldn't expect very much deregulation of employment law because the European employment law that we have, I think the Labour Party is very much in sympathy with. If we had a Conservative government, so if people think it's more likely to get a Conservative government in 2020, then I would think we'd have to look to the agenda of that government and see what they would prioritise in terms of deregulating employment law and what areas they would choose to change.
And we'll talk about that later, about the likely targets for the Conservative government might take. Just moving on then to something I touched on at the beginning of the podcast. Recent research has shown a significant number of European employees working in the UK are worried about the impact of a Brexit that could have on their job security. So if you're an employer and you're faced with concerns from staff about this, what should you do?
Well, it's very difficult to know what an employer can do until we actually know what the law is going to be when Brexit takes place. I think probably the most it can do at the moment is reassure employees that nothing is going to happen overnight. We're probably going to have this two-year period. I don't think people are going to get themselves deported this summer as a result of Brexit. Really all we're looking at is what is our immigration law going to be once Brexit has actually taken place. It could be that there will be a point system. It could be that the law will treat very differently people who are already in the country and working as opposed to people who want to now come to the UK. And until we know what the position is going to be on Brexit, what is negotiated, and then what immigration law is introduced by the next government, there's really no way of telling exactly what the rules are going to be. What we can at least say is it's not something that's an urgent problem that employees will need to deal with.
Okay, so some reassurance there for employees. So Darren, in your experience with working with employers, what are the sort of key concerns that you've received regarding a potential Brexit?
Well, it's interesting actually to think about what aspects of European law most concern politicians and what aspects of European law most concern employers. I've certainly been doing this subject for long enough to know lots of directives that caused a great deal of anguish when they were being introduced, but actually had relatively little impact on employers. The Information and Consultation of Employees Directive, for example, which led to the Information and Consultation of Employees Regulations, was a fraught negotiation and something we worried about enormously right up until the point when it was introduced, and then it turned out to have almost no impact at all and no one ever asks me about it. The same is true to an extent about the agency workers' regulations. A lot of work done when the directive was negotiated, when the regulations were coming in, but actually in practical day-to-day terms, it's not something I come across. What I get asked about day after day is the transfer of undertakings regulations, changing terms and conditions, what is a transfer and what isn't a transfer. I get asked about discrimination. I get asked about what is a disability and what isn't a disability. I get asked about what a reasonable adjustment means. I get asked a lot about consultation on collective redundancies. All of those things are wrapped up with European law, are potentially going to be affected by Brexit and are potentially areas that a new government is going to look at if we do decide to leave the EU.
And we've also seen some large employers, the likes of Airbus and Siemens, sharing their views on the referendum directly with their employees. So can employers do this? And what are the implications of indicating your staff which way to vote?
I've got no problem with an employer expressing its own opinion about whether a Remain or a Leave vote would be a good thing for that business or for the country or the sector or whatever. I've got no problem with giving employees information about how their employer interacts with Europe and how it takes advantage of European membership or doesn't, depending on the nature of the employer. What I think, of course, employers have to be very careful not to do is that they're not trying to coerce people into voting a particular way. It is, of course, a secret ballot, so you wouldn't expect them to be able to do that. But if any employer is thinking of actually marching people to the polling booths and checking what they're voting, they shouldn't do that. But I think that's pretty much common sense. I think where there might be a potential sensitivity to be aware of is in dealing with conversations about Brexit in the workplace. These can sometimes get a bit heated, and so an employer needs to have a common sense approach to how it deals with that sort of thing. And bear in mind that there are going to be people out there who will feel so strongly about sovereignty or Brexit or the European Union that they will regard their beliefs as having the status of a philosophical belief protected by the Equality Act. You
yeah.
don't want to get bogged down in one of those cases. So a light and common sense touch is what we're looking for from an employer here. You just don't want to get too involved in one of those arguments.
Absolutely not. So we touched on earlier that the actual outcome of a Brexit is going to depend on who's in power at the time. But what parts of employment law might change in the event of a Brexit?
As you say, it very much depends on who we get into power. But let's think, first of all, of what might happen if we had a Conservative government. If we had a Conservative government, I think it's fair to say that they would have a deregulatory agenda. So there would certainly be things that they would want to look at in terms of employment law that they would think should be changed. In particular, things like the working time regulations, which isn't necessarily the area of EU law that has the biggest impact, but it's something that has a totemic significance for a lot of Conservative MPs. They remember how the Working Time Directive was introduced as a health and safety measure. The Conservative government at the time challenged that unsuccessfully in the European Court of Justice. Way back in 1997, the Conservative Party manifesto said they will insist on not having to implement the Working Time regulations. So on balance, I would say that's certainly something that they're going to look at. It's difficult to say exactly what they would propose doing, though. Can you imagine any government putting in its manifesto that it's going to withdraw the right to paid annual leave? I wouldn't have thought so. Are they really going to say they're going to abolish the right to a 20-minute rest break in a day that has 6 hours of work, or abolish the right to one day off per week? I wouldn't have thought so. But they would certainly want to look at how they could make the operation of those regulations more flexible. Maybe there are different ways in which employers can negotiate exceptions. Maybe the opt-out from the 48-hour week can be extended to other areas of the regulations. They might want to look at the way in which holiday pay is calculated, the way in which holidays are granted. Although, to be honest, they probably don't need to change the regulations too much to do that, because a lot of the changes that we've had in recent years about including overtime and the way in which we deal with sick pay and sickness absence and things like that are actually the result of the European Court of Justice rather than the words of the regulations themselves.
Okay, so that deals with working time then. What else might change?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if the agency workers' regulations were actually repealed in their entirety by a new government. They haven't been around for that long. They probably haven't had as much of an impact as a lot of people thought they would have. And they're certainly a set of regulations that a deregulatory government is likely to think of as being interfering too much with business. So it could be that as a big repeal, we'll see the agency workers' regulations go altogether. I think there are two other areas that I'd particularly highlight as likely to change. The first is around TUPE, transfer regulations. I don't think transfer regulations would be repealed altogether, because I think they're so intertwined in the way in which the contracting of services works at the moment that it would be just too much of a shock to the system. But I can certainly imagine that things like information and consultation around TUPE transfers would be changed, and certainly the way in which harmonising terms and conditions operates, because at the moment there's a very convoluted paragraph in TUPE that talks about potentially harmonising terms and conditions 1 year after the transfer, providing those terms and conditions are derived from a collective agreement. And it's all very messy because the government comes up against European law, which is very much against the idea of harmonising individual terms and conditions. I would have thought that a new government with a deregulatory mindset would want to come up with a way in which the terms and conditions can be more easily harmonised following a TUPE transfer. And if I was going to bet on the thing that would definitely happen, I would say a cap on compensation when it comes to discrimination claims. I'm old enough to remember when there used to be a cap on compensation and discrimination claims as well as unfair dismissal claims, and that was only removed as a result of a challenge in the Marshall case at the European Court of Justice. And since then, there's been no cap on compensation in any discrimination claim. The government tried to look at this in 2010, the last coalition, because they wanted to find some way of imposing a cap. They thought that some compensation levels were getting out of hand. But they kept coming up against the fact that the EU simply doesn't accept that there should be a limit on compensation if that's the remedy you've got for a discrimination claim. If the EU was no longer a factor, I would certainly expect some sort of cap on compensation, whether at the same level of an unfair dismissal cap of about a year's pay or at some other level. I would certainly expect that that would be something that would happen. In fact, the government has tried in the past to look at whether TUPE should be considerably changed. There are aspects of TUPE that aren't necessarily dictated by the directive. In particular, the way in which they define a service provision change could be regarded as gold plating, actually going beyond what the directive requires. And the government had a consultation where they looked at changing that so that service provision changes were taken out of the regulations, and business was actually against it because they were used to the system as it operated and thought they benefited from the certainty that that gave. So I don't think it's necessarily likely that the government would want to remove TUPE altogether.
Okay, and just touching on the point you made there about TUPE, there are quite a few examples of UK law that don't actually derive from EU law, or where the UK law goes beyond what the EU directive requires. So can you just give us some examples of those? Because I think it's important to point that out to people.
Well, yes, we can sometimes give the impression that the whole of our employment law depends on the EU, but of course it doesn't. Unfair dismissal law, for example, has got nothing to do with any EU directives. That's entirely a domestic measure. The same is true of the national minimum wage. That's not something that's set by the EU. There are also lots of areas where you could regard European law and UK law as being sort of symbiotic. You know, it's not necessarily that there is this rule imposed from Brussels, but as part of the European Union, we've helped develop the way in which the law operates. Take disability discrimination, for example. That was something introduced in 1995 with no European context to that. That was a domestic Conservative government doing that. Since then, we've had a directive which now covers disability discrimination, and we find that that's moving the meaning on. That's affecting the way in which disability discrimination works. Things like the definition of disability is now moving in a new direction because of European case law. So it's not as straightforward as just a rule comes from Brussels and we have to implement it. Sometimes we've got our own rules. Sometimes we've got our own rules which are then modified by subsequent European Court of Justice decisions. It's all very complex and intertwined.
That's right, and we've recently had shared parental leave, haven't we, which wasn't something deriving from EU law. And obviously in the pipeline we've got gender pay gap reporting and the Trade Union Act, which also don't derive from EU law. So some big things there that we can't necessarily attribute to the EU.
Absolutely, yeah.
You touched on earlier about working time and existing case law from the European Court of Justice. What's going to happen to that existing case law if we do indeed come out of the EU?
Well, I think it's an interesting legal problem to try and figure out what our existing legislation means if it stays in place, when for years and decades in some cases, that legislation has been interpreted in line with the directive. So there are all sorts of aspects of our employment law and transfer of undertakings and equality, pregnancy discrimination, things like that, where the way in which we've interpreted our law has been influenced by European Court of Justice decisions. Now, if we leave Europe, then I guess the starting point is to say, well, we're no longer part of that system, and so the European Court of Justice no longer has any sway over how we interpret our legislation. But that legislation was still implemented in order to meet European obligations, and so there's at least an argument to say that we should continue to look at what the European Court of Justice says about the directives and what they mean to see what our regulations mean in consequence. In particular, where you've got domestic courts that have interpreted our legislation. So, for example, the Bear Scotland case is a domestic Employment Appeal Tribunal judgment about including overtime in holiday pay, but that was based on their understanding of what the directive required. If the regulations are no longer governed by the directive, what happens to that Bear Scotland case? Does it still tell us how to calculate holiday pay, or does it fall away completely? There's going to be some interesting new case law on how we interpret holiday pay that's going to have to look at those cases and try and figure out what the status of that case law is. I don't think it's entirely clear.
Okay, so just to sum up then, looking at the long-term picture, what can we expect if we do come out of the EU?
Well, I think long-term is always more difficult to predict, but I think we should be aware that the overall impact of Brexit on our employment law looked at in the long term could be absolutely enormous. We've tried to focus on the things that a new government is likely to want to do pretty much straight away. But over the course of 10, 15, 20 years, there are any number of things that can be looked at in terms of discrimination, in terms of family leave, in terms of the way in which we deal with pregnancy, particularly on the role of consultation in change. So collective consultation on redundancies, consultation on things like transfer of undertakings, that sort of thing. Potentially, those are all up for major reform when a government decides to get around to it. And at the moment, we're in a place in employment law where we're thinking, well, there's been this massive fall in tribunal cases because of the fees that have been introduced. A new government is going to have employment law as a priority. But that can change over time quite easily. In 10 years' time, that might not be the case at all. So we shouldn't underestimate the potential consequences for employment law of Brexit, not just in an election manifesto in 2020, but the one in 2025, the one in 2030, and the one beyond that.
That was a really helpful discussion. Thanks very much, Darren. Okay, so we've covered the key things that employers need to be thinking about now in the run-up to the referendum. And if the outcome is that there is a Brexit, then we'll come back to you, Darren, if that's okay, to talk about consequences.
I'd look forward to that.
So, as I said, we'll continue to monitor the referendum and its consequences, so do look out for further information on our EU referendum Hot Topic page, which you'll find on the right-hand side of the Expert HR homepage. That brings us to the end of this week's Expert HR podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Ellie Gelder. We'll be back next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.